All right, y'all, welcome to the Scott Horton Show. I'm the director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, author of the book Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and the brand new Enough Already, Time to End the War on Terrorism. And I've recorded more than 5,500 interviews since 2003, almost all on foreign policy, and all available for you at scotthorton.org. You can sign up for the podcast feed there, and the full interview archive is also available at youtube.com/Scott Horton Show. Hey guys, check it out. On the line, I've got David Swanson, and man, is he an anti-war guy, and he wrote all these books, including War is a Lie, and I'm sorry, refresh my memory on the name of the last World War II book you put out there.
Oh, it was called Leaving World War II Behind.
Yes, that's the one I couldn't remember the name of, which is excellent. And War is a Lie does not exclude World War II, as a lot of members of America's civic religion might have preferred. It's the full blasphemy version there, War is a Lie as well. And listen, always great stuff from you. Let's Try Democracy is the name of the website, davidswanson.org. And isn't this an interesting thingy that you wrote? War Powers Reform Bill, far better than feared. Huh. All right. So give us the lowdown. What kind of war powers, what you call it? This is an actual update of the War Powers Resolution of 1973. Is that right?
If it were to pass, it would abolish that law and create a new one in its place, as well as abolishing various other laws and quasi-legal things. And you know, I feared it would be awful. I don't know if most people pay the slightest attention to the whole subject and whether anybody else had similar fears. But, you know, I watch these announcements from my senator in Virginia, Tim Kaine, about how he's going to restore war powers to the proper place in Congress. And then you read the bill, and it basically abolishes the War Powers Resolution without replacing it with a darn thing, and it seems like a scam. And then you watch these movements over the past 6 months where people are talking about, you know, repealing various AUMFs, and they're all avoiding mentioning the existence of the AUMF from 2001, these being the authorizations for the use of military force. There's several of them out there and running, and the House, but not the Senate, has been repealing them, but not the one that they and the activists and everybody have made the most noise about for decades now, the one from 2001. And so I've become very cynical. And plus, I was hearing about this bill before it was introduced and made public. And, you know, insider advocates were trying to make it better in various ways, but they wouldn't show it to me or tell me what it said. And I didn't want to, you know, tweak a bill and make it better when the whole thing could be catastrophically bad. And so when it was published last week and looked to be, you know, on the whole, very, very good, I at least was pleasantly surprised.
All right. Well, do tell then.
Well, it would abolish all of the AUMFs, all of them, including the one nobody would mention for the past 6 months, the one that started the endless wars in 2001. It would abolish them. That's good. It would also abolish the War Powers Resolution of 1973, and that's scary, unless it's replaced with something at least as good or better. And you know, this is all admitting that nobody even used the thing really until the Trump presidency, when both houses tried to end the war on Yemen, knowing they could count on a veto. Since when they've dropped it, and you know, some of us have been pushing since day one of Biden for Congress to do the same thing again, for goodness sake. And just this week, a number of organizations are coming on board. So the point being, these laws are only as good as the people who use them. But this one would replace the War Powers Resolution with something that for the most part is better and stronger. And this new one, not from Senator Kaine, but from Senators Murphy and Lee and Sanders, and I don't know if anybody else has signed on yet, would shift from 60 days to 20 days the amount of time the president gets to wage a war without Congress. That you know, would be an improvement on the War Powers Resolution. it would automatically cut off funding for unauthorized wars, that having to be a second step in the, you know, in the current state of affairs. It would put restrictions and limits on what could be created as any future AUMF. They would have to be specific about who you're attacking, when and where, and they would die after 2 years unless recreated. So that's all good. They would also, this new law would also deal with the hostilities problem. You may recall Obama's lawyer going into Congress and saying, oh, hell, we can bomb every inch of Libya and you guys have no say under the War Powers Resolution because that's not hostilities. And people are scratching their head, or these are going to be non-hostile bombs, friendly bombs. What are those? You know,
but yeah, I think they said, hey, look, as long as we're bombing people who can't possibly hit back at us, and it's all a one-way street, then that doesn't count.
Right. It doesn't count. And it doesn't count under the War Powers Resolution because it never defines what hostilities mean. And it's all worded about U.S. troops and inserting U.S. troops into some physical location. And much of the new bill just carries over much of that language. But it also specifically, if maybe contradictorily, defines hostilities to include attacking somebody from a distance. So you couldn't bomb a country anymore and call it not hostilities. And so this would change not just the congressional understanding since 1973, but the U.S. media understanding if it followed along. You know, we hear all about, oh, we're going to end the war on Afghanistan, but keep bombing it. And you scratch your head and try and figure that out. But it means if there are not U.S. troops admittedly on the ground in a place, then it's not a war and it's not hostile, even if you're bombing it. That would change under this. Now, there are various concerns. Various smart observers and analysts have dissected this new bill and found other potential loopholes. For one thing, it excludes coverage of any war that the United States is helping some other government wage, The United States it becomes a party to that war. Right. But then it never defines what the hell a party is. So this seems, you know, directly intended at taking the war on Yemen, the war that Congress at least pretended to try to end under the existing War Powers Resolution last presidency, out from under coverage of the new War Powers Resolution. So you,
same thing for troops embedded with the Iraqi army, too, fighting against ISIS there.
Sure. Anywhere that the United States, you know, they're not going to be in a combat mission anymore. This morning I read this at war email that the New York Times sends out, and they admitted, you know, very clearly that this ending the combat mission is just meaningless verbiage, right? And so I went and searched the New York Times website for ending Iraq combat mission, and I found straight-faced, you know, straightforward reports from about 4 days ago and also about 11 years ago and various other occasions. The United States is ending the combat mission in Iraq. You know, so any of these missions, assistances, advising, arming, facilitating, any time the United States is helping some Southwest Asian dictatorship or, you know, anybody in the world with their war, well, now it's out from under. Just like if it's a NATO war, it's out from under congressional oversight under this new law, but not under the current War Powers Resolution if anybody were to ever use the thing. So that's a weakness that ought to be fixed if these people are actually serious about what they claim to be serious about. But this new bill also does additional things unrelated to the War Powers Resolution. It puts more limits on, or at least allows Congress, should it choose to more easily stop and restrict weapon sales to foreign governments, and also gives Congress greater ease and power to end so-called states of emergency. There are like dozens of states of emergency currently running, whether anybody knows it or not, that give presidents outrageous powers. So it seems like a well-intended piece of legislation, but then, you know, there are bits and there are others besides the, you know, the party thing that that look worrying.
Hold on just one second. Be right back. So you're constantly buying things from Amazon.com. Well, that makes sense. They bring it right to your house. So what you do, though, is click through from the link in the right-hand margin at scotthorton.org, and I'll get a little bit of a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. Won't cost you a thing. Nice little way to help support the show. Again, that's right there in the margin at scotthorton.org.
Hey, you want to know what industry is recession-proof? Yes, you're right. Of course, pot. Scott Horton here to tell you about Green Mill Supercritical Extractors. The SFE Pro and Super Producing Parallel Pro can be calibrated to produce all different types and qualities of cannabis crude oils for all different purposes. These extractors are the most important part of your cannabis oil business for precision, versatility, and efficiency. GreenMillSupercritical.com.
Hey y'all, Scott here. If you want a real education in history and economics, you should check out Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom. Tom and a really great group of professors and experts have put together an entire education of everything they didn't teach you in school, but should have. Follow through from the link in the margin at scotthorton.org for Tom Woods' Liberty Classroom.
Well, it is still Congress, but it sure sounds like overall that this is a superior replacement for the War Powers Resolution itself.
I think so. If I had to choose which one do we get, even as it's worded now, I would take the new one. But, you know, of course, you would want them to actually use it. It doesn't do a darn bit of good. I mean, they've got the UN Charter, which makes wars a crime. Nobody uses that, right? So you'd have to have a Congress willing to pass the thing, a president willing to sign it. And they'd have to actually mean it and you know, want to follow through and use it.
Yeah. Isn't that funny the way the UN Charter's ban on war is taken as, yeah, of course. And we're the cops. It's our job to enforce that law by waging wars, to stop anybody else from waging wars, if that's what we say we're doing.
Yeah, it's incredible to me. I mean, the reason I try to remind people of the Kellogg-Briand Pact, which is a treaty the U.S. and 80-some countries are party to and have been for decades that bans all war, period, full stop, is not because there are any wars that are legal under the U.N. Charter, but because everybody thinks there are wars that are legal under the U.N. Charter because it has these silly loopholes in it. It has one for UN authorized wars, which has never been used. The UN doesn't authorize wars, but people imagine it does. And it has one for defensive wars. And the UN has never recognized, you know, any recent wars, and certainly no US-led recent wars as being defensive, and no reasonable person would. And they're all prosecutable now under the International Criminal Court. But everybody imagines it. The best peace activists in the world imagine that various U.S. wars are either U.N. authorized or defensive. And the U.N. facilitates this in some cases by passing resolutions that it knows will be misinterpreted and abused, like it did on Libya, passed a resolution that didn't say you can go bomb and overthrow the government of Libya, but everybody pretended it did.
Right.
You know, so if you would get rid of these loopholes and these pretenses and just acknowledge that war is illegal, you know, then war powers debates would be as outrageous as, you know, congressional rape power debates and congressional child abuse power debate. I mean, who the hell cares whether it's the president or Congress abusing your child? It's a crime, yeah. You know?
Well, and listen, for all the FDR haters out there, I'm with you. Forget the UN Charter or any of these treaties or anything like that. How about Article 1, Section 8, Clause 11 says that only Congress can authorize the executive branch to go to war, and that the president's not even elsewhere in Article 2. It says that the president's not even the commander-in-chief until he's called into the actual service of the United States by the Congress. And yet you have, as you just mentioned, the war in Libya, where they refused to authorize it, and the war just continued for 8 more months after that, 7 more months after that. And then you have the war in Yemen, which no one's pretended to authorize at all, which Congress has never, the only time they voted on it at all, was to pass the War Powers Resolution and tell the president to stop it. And then he didn't, and they didn't impeach him. He vetoed it, and they said, okay, well, we were hoping you would veto it. We were just grandstanding, thanks. And then that was it. And the whole thing goes on.
You say FDR haters be meaning people who hate presidential power?
Oh, sure. Well, you know how us crusty old libertarians and right-wingers are about, you know, all of the New Deal and World War II and the aftermath of it all. And I'm just saying, no matter how much you hate the baby blue flag, well, forget all that then. Just how about James Madison and the boys and their work from 1787 says you can't do this. You know?
I know, it was the one thing they got right. It was the thing that has held up the best, right? I mean, you can criticize these rich, old, cynical, hypocritical, old, white, male, slave-owning, oligarchic, anti-democratic, you know, founding fathers.
Well, and Nelson Rockefeller wrote the UN Charter, right? So, same difference.
If it weren't for FDR, Congress might have passed an amendment to allow public votes before any war. It was FDR who put the stopper on that. And if you had had to have public votes before any war, you would have had few, if any, wars from that day to this. It was also FDR who, trying to figure out how to prosecute the losers of World War II, finally noticed the existence of the Kellogg-Briand Pact, had it pointed out to him by a couple of lawyers, and said, well, let's twist this thing. Let's distort it. Let's pretend, as the Senate pretended after ratifying it, that it banned aggression, not war. And we'll accuse the other side, not our side, of aggression, and we'll prosecute the losers, and we'll prosecute only the things they did that we didn't do too, and we'll call it even-handed justice that we will stand before and suffer along with everyone else on equal ground from this day forward. That was FDR, and that's where you got this this notion that war isn't banned, only, you know, aggression by the wrong people is banned.
Right. Yep. And we could go on too. well, look, you know, I always like to joke, and we may have talked about this before, that especially with Americans, very short-term, long-term memories, that you could completely forget Madison and Jefferson and Washington and even Lincoln, that really it's FDR and Truman who are the founding fathers of America now and the modern American empire and, you know, our unending neoliberal global state and on a perpetual precipice of complete and total disaster.
I think that's absolutely right. And as much as I might criticize FDR, although I actually praise him for many things you would criticize him for, Truman has got to be the worst president the United States has ever had. I mean, in terms of damage caused up to this point in time, I think there can be very little question. This is the person who created the Cold War, the military-industrial complex, the spying-industrial complex, the war madness, the presidential monopoly over war powers. This was Truman.
Yep, absolutely. That National Security Act of 1947 was like taking a cyanide pill for the whole society right there. Or strapping on a bomb, more like it, you know?
Yeah, and he supposedly regretted parts of it. He supposedly regretted the CIA getting out of control under Eisenhower. But, you know, it's important to get it right when you're in power, not just when you're campaigning and when you're in retirement. You know, there seems to be so much forgiveness. You know, you're seeing George W. Bush, you know, in New York Times op-eds for, you know, let's make him a special ambassador. I mean, there's so much forgiveness for the crap these people say when they're campaigning and after they're in office. It's when they're in office abusing power that counts. And Truman, got just about everything wrong.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about the fact that in the first couple of words of your article, you got the name Mike Lee, a Republican senator who's co-signed this thing with Murphy and Sanders. Is that important, you think?
I hope it is, of course. The Democrats, even when they have the majority, steadfastly refuse to use it. They will not pass anything unless it has Republican support, no matter if, 85% of the country screams and yells for it. They just won't. Of course, they continue down this path they're on for a little while. They're not going to have the majority anymore. The Republicans are. So they're going to have a very slim majority, too, although they'll use the hell out of it. The question is, can you get more members on board and pass the thing? The Democrats won't do it unless they have both Joe Biden on board and Republicans on board. The Republicans won't do it, unless Joe Biden's against it. And so this makes it all very, very tricky. The factor that's missing that makes some of these things sometimes possible on rare golden moments, is massive public outcry. It isn't there. So I appreciate shows like this one trying to inform and I hope energize people to push for this sort of thing.
Yeah, well, listen, I was just right before you, I was talking, or two interviews ago, I was talking with Nasser Arabi, this reporter who lives in Sana'a, Yemen, talking about innocent people dying all around him. So it's kind of important, rather than just a hobby like skateboarding or bowling or something.
I think it's infinitely important. I think the wars are a top cause of death and injury and trauma and homelessness and destruction and environmental destruction and government secrecy and government power abuses and the fueling of hatred and racism and bigotry in cultures. And I think the budgets for the wars, you would like to see done away with and I would like to see put to good use, either way, would be such a vast improvement on them remaining war budgets that you would save vastly more lives than the lives that are lost and damaged in the wars thus far. I say thus far because without continuing down this path, we could get away with the ever-growing, greater than ever before risk of nuclear apocalypse, which is kind of important, yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. So now here's the thing that's a bit of a hang-up that, I don't know, this kind of thing matters, right? That the first time I ever met someone who was sincerely anti-war, it was a beautiful hippie girl in a sundress saying, oh, everything could just be fine, like that kind of thing. And that something like that is kind of the idea in the head of the right, that a bunch of people who'd be no good in a fight anyway say we shouldn't be fighting all the time or whatever, but then, hey, at least the Constitution authorizes national defense and it's a dangerous world out there and whatever. And then it's hard for them to admit, right, just for the sake of, maybe having to change their mind or just for the sake of masculinity or whatever, that no, actually, really, the welfare state is way better than the warfare state, which is actually completely unnecessary since we have no natural enemies in the world anyway, here in the middle part of North America, where everything could be fine if we would quit picking all the fights, The hippie girl in the sundress is right, And in fact, ended up joining the army, by the way, and took my friend, her little brother, with her. And they went to war in Iraq.
Well, maybe she was right, but her understanding wasn't deep enough or her opportunities weren't wide enough. I don't know. I think hippie girls in sundresses are probably usually right, more likely than Congress members in suits and ties. But, the problem is that she was demonstrably right. The facts, the scholarship are overwhelming. If you read something like Erica Chenoweth's new book called Civil Resistance, What Everyone Should Know, the documentation of campaigns, including resistance to occupations and dictatorships and invasions, not just abuses of power, that have been principally nonviolent, have been far more successful, and those successes far longer lasting than violent ones. You want to be radical, you want to resort to the strongest tool you have, it's a nonviolent action, which, you know, can range from, you know, putting your body on the line up against sticks and clubs and knives and guns, because the other side is always violent. You know, this is a rather stupid misunderstanding that a lot of people have about nonviolent activism. They think that somehow there's this imagination that the other side will be nonviolent too, which of course it will not. It never, ever will. But the approaches, the techniques, the tactics that have been successful have included the goofiest hippie girl sounding things you could imagine, like the people of Latvia evicting the Soviet military by singing songs. Sounds stupid until you go watch a movie called The Singing Revolution and see them do it and try to imagine how many of them would have had their heads blown off if they'd tried to do it violently. The nonviolent activism denial has the same relationship to facts as the climate change denial or anything else where people are willing to appeal to facts. But in this case, it's politically acceptable to go with the ignorance, you know, to avoid the facts, to say, well, you're naive and stupid, but don't give me any books because I don't want to know anything. But you're naive and stupid, and the only thing we have to save ourselves is the violence that's counterproductive and destroying us. You know, that there needs to be a shift to recognizing that it's people across U.S. society. Some of them wear sundresses and some of them don't, but they're right. And there's really no longer any possibility of disputing that.
All right, you guys, check out David Swanson at davidswanson.org and really take a good look at this piece. And he links to the actual bill text and a couple of articles about it as well. War Powers Reform Bill. Far better than feared. Thanks so much for your time, Dave. Appreciate it.
Thanks for everything you do, Scott.
The Scott Horton Show, Anti-War Radio, can be heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, APSradio.com, antiwar.com, scotthorton.org, and libertarianinstitute.org.